my sight, hope for a generation.
Countryman, fellow slaves of the plantation, you're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. So get ready to laugh, get ready to listen, and be prepared to learn. Because although your enslavement is serious business, it doesn't mean you have to take it seriously. Here's your host, the indubitable Vinnie Eastwood.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com for your listening pleasure. You can check out the archives on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. There's a little archives page there, as well as at the show archives page on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. That's Vinnie with a Y, because it's the most important question, and Eastwood, like, go ahead, make my news. Now, before I just cut to my guest, this morning I heard a clip on national radio. What's the reporter's name? Lying News Spinner. That's what I call him. I don't know his real name. But anyway, it sounds very similar. And it just like interviewing somebody who's had their cannabis cafe shut down, and he's trying to kind of like goad her into admitting that the cannabis harmed people and so on and so forth, when technically nobody's died from it in 10,000 years of recorded usage. And the fact that media talking heads keep trying to beat that dead horse, which has been dead 10,000 years, it just frustrates me so. Anyway, my very special guest joining me today on a lighter note, actually it's a lot worse, is Bruce Rogan from the Mungify Residents and Ratepayers Association, who I consider to be one of the New Zealand's leading authorities on our white-collar criminal circuit of our white-collar criminal protection racket. That's what we have here in this country running the show. Bruce, welcome to the program.
Hi, Vinny. Thank you for the compliment.
Well, I like to be accurate where possible.
Indeed.
So yes. I wanted to actually get this out of you as well, because, mate, corruption's such a big problem here in New Zealand, and nobody thinks that it even exists, least of all New Zealanders, let alone the rest of the world who don't know anything about New Zealand. And it can come as quite a shock to people. And what's frustrating is that when your own countrymen can't even see what's right in front of them.
Yeah, correct. Well, the reason why the community as a whole doesn't have a view on corruption is because a very sophisticated operation has been in place for a very long time to deny the existence of corruption. And as a serious fraud office investigator said to me about 4 years ago, just before he was pulled off the case, one of the real reasons that New Zealand doesn't have any corruption is because it stopped looking for it. It persuaded itself that it was not corrupt, so it disbanded all the agencies of the Crown that were there to look for and root out corruption. And as a result, his view, and he was a former UK murder squad detective, his view was that of advanced countries, New Zealand was probably the most corrupt by virtue of the fact that it had ceased at all levels of government to look for any corruption. And the best example of a watchdog organisation that is supposed to seek out corruption and identify it is the Auditor General. And the Auditor General has not done her job, according to the statutory requirements of her position, for 20 years.
20 years?
Yeah.
Whoa, I would say, wait. Is this This isn't since, like, by chance, Roger Nomics reforms, is it?
It is pretty much since then, because the Harvard Business School developed an ideology that regulation was a terrible evil that was stymieing the development of Western society, and that nobody should be regulated in what they do, because that will kill innovation and entrepreneurship and all the other wonderful things that, in their view, led to progress in society. So the US dismantled a lot of its legislation that was basically regulatory in nature, the legislation that regulated Wall Street and its activities, and we saw the huge financial collapse that was a direct result of that. And New Zealand has done the same thing. The Auditor General was told at about that time of Roger Douglas and the rest of them to just go easy, regulate with a light hand, even though it didn't repeal the legislation, so that it could carry on with the facade that it had regulatory regimes in place. The Auditor General was told to take it easy. And so the Auditor General became a cheerleader for all kinds of things, such as the public-private partnership model, which she endorsed and encouraged even after the Labor government made it illegal to have them. She was cheerleading for it in the Mangawai sewage scheme project, which turned, as most people know, into one of the most catastrophic overspends in the history of this country.
So you're saying a great big sewage project turned to shit? Who could have predicted that?
Well, we just happened to be the leaders in that process. There are plenty of others that that are nearly as bad, including one in Thames and many others, but ours was just a little bit more spectacular.
And, of course, that you went through all these proper channels trying to get these people exposed, and it's kind of like, you know what I actually liken it to? I liken it to government-protected pedophile rings. I've seen this happen in the United States, where there'll be a group of pedophiles who are running an organization, or like a burn hospital for children or something like that. And then one child will say something to their parent, and their parent will then go to the local police chief. Unbeknownst to them, that police chief is on the take. Then they go to a doctor, and then they find out later on that that doctor's on the take. And then they try to escalate it. They go and get yourself a lawyer, and then the lawyer's on the take. And then you get into the courtroom, and then you find out the judge is on the take. And so you take it higher. And then it doesn't matter where you go or what you do or who you go for. There is nobody who's supposed to be in a position of authority to find and punish criminal scum, right, who actually isn't on the take.
Now, that is exactly right. And you see, the population as a whole takes the view that people in authority, professional people in authority, such as judges, would not be susceptible to being psychopathic or sociopathic or paedophilic. Because they say, well, these people are, you know, they're trained and they're above that fray. They don't get involved in that. But you see, the statistics are unavoidable. 10% of the human population is not heterosexual. And it doesn't matter what you do. You can deny it. The Russians can claim that there are no homosexuals in Russia. If that was true, then there would be a lot more homosexuals somewhere else to make up the numbers. But the truth of the matter is that these conditions, these states of mind, what are called psychopathies, are distributed more or less uniformly throughout the human population. So if 10% of the general population is paedophilic, then so will 10% of the judges, 10% of the doctors, 10% of the lawyers, 10% of the crane operators, 10% of the politicians. And if I may, sound a little warning here. You mentioned marijuana and the absence of any harm from marijuana over 10,000-year period.
I didn't say absence of any harm. I said absence of death caused directly by it.
Yeah, well, and I'm sure you've got absolutely impeccable statistics to back up that claim. And one of the things I happen to know from research I've done recently, Vinny, is that you will know, and so will a lot of your listeners know, that there's a widespread rumor that if you start into marijuana, you will end up in heroin and pee because it's a stepping stone process. So you've got to stop people from starting into marijuana. Now, we all know that's complete and utter tripe, but I know for a fact that the first
bureaucracy doesn't work that way, because it's like as soon as you put somebody in a position of power and authority, statistically speaking, people will eventually abuse that power and authority unless they've got people overseeing them, making sure that they don't do it, and they have to be overseen kind of constantly. Yeah. Is that where you're going?
That is where I'm going, and I'm about to say that it is well established that the first sign of a progression towards serious paedophilia is a tendency to pull girls' hair.
Well, Mr. John Key might be very interested in hearing about that.
Well, I'm only speaking in very general terms that the investigators have shown that a predilection for touching young girls and young boys in various parts of their anatomy is a sign of incipient paedophilia. Now, of course, when a person becomes a paedophile, doesn't mean they stop doing all the other funny things that paedophiles do, because they are hooked on such tactile behaviour, because that's how they get their rocks off. You see, it's usually paedophiles are usually people who are hated by everybody else, and they can't attract relationships from the point of non-coercive relationships. The only way they can establish relationships with other people is to engineer some power over them. And so when a national MP suddenly and unexpectedly left the House for family reasons that were best dealt with outside Parliament, was the statement that was made. The Prime Minister of New Zealand gave a glowing report to the individual as he left, saying that he would have made a wonderful Minister of Police. And I think that, you know, this is just sort of circumstantial speculation on my part, but the claim that you made that when someone detects or uncovers child molestation or paedophilia, suddenly in many cases there's a kind of closing of ranks that prevents any investigation. We've seen it with the Catholic Church in just about every country in the world. And we see it all the time in investigations involving parliamentarians in this country and in the UK. So, yes, corruption is a terrible disease. And once the system has allowed itself to become corrupted, cover-ups just happen on a regular basis, sadly. And
what I find very interesting about that particular instance was when I think this is Mike Sabin, who was allegedly had sexual relations or something like that with his two stepdaughters or something of that nature. Shortly following that, the Prime Minister, his boss, John Key, accused the opposition of supporting sex offenders directly after this happened. And that's another thing that I've found is very, very classic in the psychopath is they always say the direct opposite of what they're doing, right? And they accuse their opponents of doing what they're doing, essentially.
Well, that is very true. The many, many instances of these religious nutters who molest young children are the most strident anti-sex, anti-molestation advocates that you ever hear. They, you know, they constantly decry. I mean, there was a case in point of an MP in New Zealand who went to jail, and who was a born again Christian and a zealot, and he was a constant advocate against homosexuality and child pornography and paedophilia and all these other things, and he was one of the worst perpetrators of them all when now, it was finally discovered.
That's like a cover, right? So if you're going to do something really, really bad and it's along one particular vein, what you have to do as a psychopath is position yourself in the exact opposite vein publicly. So if you want to rape children and everything like that, you become a children's advocate at Child, Youth and Family Services, for example. If you're if you're a psychopathic control freak or something like that that wants to hurt people, you apply for a job at the police, which is supposed to protect people, you know, so on and so forth. So that the reason why people do not understand how much control psychopaths have over their life is because there's a trend whereby almost everybody that you trust, anybody who's in a position of authority, is actually not there to do their, you know, quote unquote job. They're actually there doing the exact opposite.
I don't know whether I'd go quite as far as to say almost everybody, but the thesis.
Oh, no. I mean,
it's absolutely right. It's absolutely right that people with these mental disorders seek out these positions to cover themselves, and that they are mental stroke physical disorders that they suffer from. And one of the reasons why, if I may hypothesize here, one of the reasons why the community doesn't detect this problem is because most people in the community, the 90%, do not have any of these psychopathic tendencies, and they cannot imagine other people having them. So they cannot say, they cannot believe when I say to them, this person is doing this because they actually want to screw you. They say, well, that's ridiculous. Nobody would want to screw me. I don't want to screw anybody else. So why would anybody else want to screw me? And they can't believe that the motivation of the government imposed commissioners is simply to steal all their money and impoverish them. They say, oh no, they're such nice people. They wouldn't do that kind of thing to me. And they simply deny the evidence of their own eyes, which is tragic. But I've recently read some material on neuroscience, and the wonderful thing that has come to me is that we can actually change this. We simply have to get our message out about how bad the system is and keep repeating it often enough so that people hear enough repetitions of the message about how bad, evil and corrupt some people are that they finally get some stuff in their brain that offsets the message, the counter message that they've been getting ever since Himmler worked out how to do it.
Now, I've been getting a lot of messages lately saying, oh, Vinny, you shouldn't be trying to expose them and so blah, 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 blah. It's not going to work, et cetera, et cetera. And they'll eventually get enough rope to hang themselves and they'll burn themselves up for the stake. And I'm like, look, if that philosophy had any validity, these scumbags wouldn't be as powerful as they are now. All right? Because as far as I'm concerned, the track record of history shows one thing when it comes to psychopathic controllers. Justice doesn't come to them unless the people bring them to the justice. You see what I'm saying? Definitely. And it's only once you realize that there's somebody like that there doing the things that they're doing that you have, I would consider, an endless obligation, as in, you know, you're the one who knows and you can, and you can protect human life by telling people about this, successful or not, you have an obligation to say so.
Yeah. Now, I think what people might be saying with some justification is that there's a limited amount of value in calling out the particular individuals who are psychopathic or who are thieves or who are corrupt, because usually such people have an immense amount of power and access to money to put out a counter message. So as soon as you call out John Thompson or whoever his name might be for corruption, he marshals all his tanks and all his guns and all his forces to slaughter you for intimating that he or she might be corrupt. So the challenge for us all decent people in society, is to simply raise awareness of the fact that we have this disease and get everybody to acknowledge that the disease exists and start focusing on cures for it. Whereas when we point out the symptoms of the disease, people are revolted, and they're revolted because people don't like their conventional wisdoms to be thrown in their face. If someone has seen a commissioner, at a government-appointed commissioner, appear at a public meeting with a smile on his face, an avuncular attitude, a friendly, polite, gentle approach, they say, "What a nice person." And when you say, "Well, that same nice person is actually a convicted felon, a psychopath, a pederast," they say, no, you must be talking about someone completely different. You must be wrong, because I've seen that person and they are not like that at all, and I cannot be that wrong. Now, somehow or other, we've got to get the people to start looking at all these monsters in our society with different eyes. We've got to get them to start looking skeptically, not cynically, but skeptically, at everything that everybody in authority does.
I'd advise cynicism, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah, sure. Well, you know, whatever armor you need to prepare yourself for looking at these people who are coming across to you as though butter wouldn't melt in their mouth, we've got to get everybody looking more questioningly at everything that parliamentarians and politicians do, local government politicians do, people who work for big corporations do. You know, when people come to you and say, "Oh, we're going to give you a lovely new water supply that will ensure that you never have to worry about running out of water in the shower ever again in your lives," they're not doing that because they want you to have enough water. They're doing that because they want to take money off you. And water, because you can't live without it, is a very, very good way, once you've eliminated all the other sources of water, is a very good way to gouge your money off you. Look at, I don't know if you're familiar with the news story in America, a place called Flint, Michigan.
Yeah.
They have, the authorities there have known for, well, it's not exactly clear how long, but a very long time, that industrial pollution has been present in the water supply that's been fed to the people of Flint. And it contains, that water supply contains fatal organisms and fatal chemicals, chemicals that are causing death in that community and very serious illness. And the authorities have known about it, but they say, "Oh, well, you know, the public doesn't know about it, so we'll just keep quiet and perhaps it'll all go away." In fact, you know, perhaps all the people will die And when they're all dead, we'll have fixed the problem, and we can just sort of repopulate the area with fresh people who you know, once, if we keep saying to them, look, we've got to go forward, we can't look back, they'll just take all that and carry on, and they'll be able to buy cheap houses in Flint because there's nobody living in them all.
Because yeah, they all died from the water.
That's how bad it has become.
Right? Well, this job has made me very jaded and cynical, Bruce. You know, reality will do that to you. And so not to mention, it makes you think very similar to the people, to the psychopathic scum in charge, right? So, like, yeah. I'll just assume things off the top of my head. You know, I'll hear a news story or something, and then I'll just assume the worst off the top of my head. And 90% of the time, you know, strangely enough, I turn out to be correct. But the 10% of the time I'm wrong, it's because the problem's actually worse than I could possibly imagine. Now, it seems to me that the general rule that I have, you know, it doesn't work every time, but in general, it seems to make a whole lot of sense. Is essentially you have a look at the opposite, right? If somebody tells you something, an official source, et cetera, whatever they're telling you, whatever their intentions are, et cetera, probably the opposite. So, and my general rule for identifying threats to me and my country and its people, you just go through this question list. Do they say they're here to help? Yeah. Are they paid to protect you? Yeah. Are they required by law to keep you safe? Yeah. Then they're probably the ones killing and enslaving you, bro.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's not lost on me and many others how often that joker O'Connor appears on television talking about the case for arming the police. Now, he's the so-called police union spokesman, and he beats a drum for arming the police. He's been set up by the government to sell the arming of the police, because the politicians know that if they proselytize arming the police, they get flack for it, because they are expected to find a way to get the police to function without walking around bristling with AK-47s and Glocks and various other things. But this joker from the police union, he looks as though he's actually there to protect the interests of what they call their members, the police, the policemen and policewomen themselves. But he's actually a shill for the government, whose real agenda is to militarize the police, because the government, this particular government in New Zealand, knows perfectly well that their policies, taken to the next stage, will result in insurrection. And that insurrection will come because people will finally realize that they have no options left but to turn on authority and kick back. And it will be much easier to put down that insurrection if you've got a militarized police force and a completely unarmed civilian population than it would be if the police force are unarmed and might even sympathize with the civilians who are kicking up against the system. And America's almost all the way to militarization of its police force, and it won't be long before the American police are actually machine gunning large numbers of people to teach, as Napoleon it was, I think you said, pour encourager les autres. We just need to do a little bit of decimation to make sure that the rest of the population know their place. And we're not far away from that here. And the key grosser love affair with the whole American model is going to result in it being pushed down our throats here.
Especially coming up with the TPPA, which will be signed in Auckland, right? And so
apparently, yeah.
Yeah, so this is the setup for the new global super state that's going to essentially, it's basically the EU for Oceania, for lack of a better term. Only one section of that document has been leaked, and it's about copyright, okay? But there are, like, untold amounts of sections in that have not been leaked and will not even be made public until 4 years after the document is signed. Now, yep. I don't know about you, but if I was a criminal sociopathic scumbag who wanted to enslave everybody with a fraudulent document and keep them enslaved for as long as humanly possible, that's what I'd do.
Yeah. Let me give you a couple of views on the TPPA that I don't think are widely understood. My area of, if you look, call it expertise, but certainly my area of focus over the last few years has been the corruption in local government. And I'm not interested just in the corruption of local government in Kaipara, where I live, but the endemic corruption in local government that's right throughout the country. Now, it's not that every local government organisation in the country is corrupt. There are instances of model organisations, mostly small ones, where the elected people absolutely strive their utmost to serve the people that they have been elected to serve, and who watch the pennies and put business the way of local people as much as they possibly can, and do an absolutely outstanding job, and they should be knighted for it. They're not the people who ever get knighted.
But instead, they're the people who constantly have to watch their back for the knives. Yeah,
yeah. Absolutely right. Now, when this TPPA is signed, if any local government organisation in this country tries to award, for example, a rubbish collection contract to a group of local people who perhaps hire some of the intellectually less able people in the community so that they have the self-respect of having a job, and they try to give that contract to such an organisation, which might be a not-for-profit entity drawing from the local community for all of its workforce, they will get slapped a writ on them from the mafia in New York saying, absolutely unacceptable, that rubbish collection contract has got to be made available for bidding by the International Rubbish Collection Agency based in New York, I think the Mafia's Rubbish Collection Agency for the World Waste Management is New York based. But that will happen instantly throughout this country. Every attempt by local government to do things locally will have writs slapped on them, alleging violations of the TPPA, and they will be dragged off to this international tribunal that's been set up by probably Google and Facebook and DuPont and others to be whacked into line, and the New Zealand government will be fined for preventing access to these business opportunities. That's what will happen to local government contracting. That's what will happen to anything to do with such things as our infrastructure like rail or road. No local company will be allowed to have any kind of priority to bid for contracts that international infrastructure companies could bid for. And the result will be all of the local infrastructure building companies like roads and downers and
electricity,
they'll be swallowed up by these multinationals.
What's problematic, though, Bruce, is that these things have already been swallowed up by the government. We've heard allegations that as much as 30% of things like Fletcher Building, et cetera, during the Christchurch recovery was actually shares held by the government, and the government gave it the contracts for a lot of the rebuilding after the Christchurch earthquake, and they paid it with insurance money from AMI, which they also allegedly have a 30% share in. So yeah. It's like a double dip criminality, right? Like I don't like to use the word criminality so much, in fact, but it's just what it is, what it is.
Yeah, it's undisclosed corruption. The Pharmac has been discussed as a potential casualty of the TPPA. Pharmac is by no means the only public health agency that will be donged by the TPPA. Our public hospitals won't survive more than 5 years after the TPPA has been signed, because the view will be that the public hospitals are doing things more cheaply than can be done by private enterprise. And that is a unfair competitive advantage that those public hospitals have got. So they will have to be demolished in order to make way for the correct model, the private model, to take over. Another casualty of the TPPA, absolutely inevitable casualty of the TPPA, and in my view it is the main reason why Key and his cabal have signed the TPPA, is the death of ACC. ACC was one of the most advanced concepts in the world outside of Scandinavia for dealing with liability for injury. And despite the attempts by Bill Birch and others to dismantle it, it has actually survived to this day largely intact. And the wonderful thing about ACC is, despite its reputation over the recent years for niggardliness about paying for care, is that it removes from the individual the onus of cheating home blame for injury. The model is that there, as far as treating you for injury is concerned, there is no blame. That is something that gets sorted out separately and doesn't involve the individual having to go and employ a $600 an hour ambulance chasing lawyer. Within 2 years of the TPPA being signed, the ACC will have gone, because the big multinational healthcare plans will say, what the hell do you think you're doing, putting a government agency in between the client and the insurer. And so goodbye ACC, and back to ambulance chasing lawyers and litigation for every car accident, every work-related accident, the whole works. These are the things that these swines who are currently running this country are programming us for, in secret and cynically and maliciously.
Have you noticed that in a society where it's every man for himself, no man can ever feel safe and comfortable, right? Not truly.
And yeah, look at Eritrea. Look at Somalia. Look at the Sudan. Look at all these countries where the rule of law has disappeared, and where if you want to be safe, you have to hire your own bodyguards and drive along the street being surrounded by them. Where private wealth has to be protected by private individuals. It's a council of despair. And it's all because of the unbridled pathological greed of a small section of the community.
Approximately 4% of the global population are psychopaths, clinically diagnosed, but a very small percentage of them, and this was what I actually found very interesting, is that only about 4% of the politicians and the people in power and things like that are actually psychopaths. However, there's a scale for psychopaths. There's down the scale, like lower level psychopaths who are bad, but they're not that bad. And then there's up the scale where you've got the worst of the worst. And they found that in the most powerful positions, in the most influential positions, they have a similar amount of psychopaths as in the general population, but they're much worse. right?
Yeah.
So that
sort of intuitively, that would be intuitively true, because setting aside the psychopaths who are actually deranged and can be put away, it's not widely understood by the general population that psychopathy is a condition that doesn't prevent the person who suffers from it from functioning. And the more extreme the condition, the more likely they are to have that drive to want to control everything. And so, yes, you're right. The creme de la creme of the psychopaths will be at the creme de la creme of control levels in society. And now, we only have to look, we see it.
That's right, but this is where we come into the whole, they're not all working together, it's not a conspiracy. Well, some of them are working together, definitely, and we can show you documents and faxes and things like that to show you collusion between certain groups of people. However, I think Ian Wishart really nailed it with this analogy. It's not a great conspiracy because they admit everything that they're doing publicly to a large degree. It's not a great conspiracy because it's more like a shark attack, all right? A feeding frenzy, if you will. Each and every shark has its own agenda. The problem is they all share the same target, us, right? And you said before about, you know, demolishing hospitals and things like that. And I remember I was talking to Vapi Kupinga. She was a Māori elder. Really lovely lady. I miss her, actually. And she was told by her daughter one time, they were outside the New Auckland hospital that was being built. Her daughter said, isn't it wonderful that they're building a new hospital? And Vapi says, it'll only be wonderful once we don't need them anymore and we start tearing them down, right? It's because we're not in a healthy society anymore. And what I find interesting is that so many lies are told all the time, just blatant misrepresentations where anybody could just, you know, do so much as a Google search and find that it's bullshit, right? Like, what was it? Key and Co. were trying to – Key and Co. You can take your family there for dinner. Anyway, he tried to convince everybody that ACC wasn't profitable and all of that kind of stuff. And at the end of the financial year, he goes, see, they only made $10 billion profit.
Yeah. And that will be the financial success of the ACC will be the reason why they have to be dismantled, because they're siphoning money away from the private sector. Nothing will be sacred, my friend. Nothing at all. This TPPA thing is the stalking horse par excellence for the demolition of democracy. One of the tragedies of life in New Zealand is that our 1930s statesmen, Michael Savage and right through, you know, Walter Nash and others, engineered New Zealand society to be the absolute best society on earth, probably ever on earth, because while there were there was huge intellectual activity and intellectual freedom in ancient Greece, it came at a terrible price for a very large number of other people who had to be slaves in order to support the lifestyle of the polis. But here, in the post-Second World War era, this entire society was almost poverty-free. It was exempt of unemployment, and the wealth distribution was such that there was virtually no resentment at all at any level of society about the amount that someone else had. As a general rule, most people were prepared to acknowledge that if someone else had a better car or had a car and you didn't, it was because they actually either needed it or deserved it. And there were extremes, but there were very, very few people who were held up as being disgusting greed mongers. and even the very greedy sort of equivalents of the Eric Watsons of those days were far more disposed to philanthropy than they are today. And that is because of that long period of thinking that everything was wonderful. Well, not thinking, knowing that everything was wonderful. People have come to believe that that was automatic, that that is how society is. But the huge amount of attention to detail that was required to put that in place and bring us from the ghastly poverty-stricken society that we came from is completely forgotten. And what we're doing now is we're slipping back into an impoverished society where we're not generating any new wealth. What we're doing is we're siphoning the wealth from one end of our society up to the other. And the people who are sucking it up are, you know, perhaps a couple of hundred in number. And the people who are losing their wealth are in the millions. And one of the mechanisms, to get onto my hobby horse, one of the mechanisms that's being used for siphoning money is local government. It is the most powerful money vacuum cleaner that exists in society in New Zealand today. And people just have no understanding of how they are being robbed by local government.
I think there's a possibility the IRD might be the actual biggest one, with local council in a close second. Everybody thinks that they're paying their taxes to the IRD to pay for their services and so on and so forth. Services which, mind you, are all getting privatized, which you have to pay for anyway. Where the fuck are our taxes going? They're going to the criminal banks offshore, about 30% of your income, right?
Yep.
So, that's number one, I'd say. But, yes, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Not at all. The reason why I say that local government is the worst, and I'm taking issue with you here, is that in most respects, the IRD is out in the open, in that the IRD implements the policies passed by Parliament in open session. Parliament cannot pass tax laws in secret. So to that extent, the population is allowing itself to be taxed with its eyes open, because it puts the people into Parliament and they pass these tax laws, and IRD is simply the agency that implements those tax laws. But that's not how it works with local government.
You're right. You're right. That's actually the main difference between them is one appears to be public and everybody kind of thinks that they know the goings on of it, whereas the other one is almost totally secret and very few people know anything about it. Do you remember when we did that TV show, Paradigm? And we also did that TV show about the TPPA with Jax and Penny. And that TPPA won way more views, maybe four times the amount of views than the local government one. It's because local government's not an interesting one. It's not sexy enough to people or whatever. It's because they have no inkling of how big a threat it actually is to their freedoms and their homes and their society.
That's right. They don't. And they let's just discuss, hopefully there's somebody listening or will be listening. Let's just discuss one aspect of local government that's crept in over the last recent times that illustrates exactly what you're just talking about. There is an organization now called the Local Government Funding Agency. This was the brainchild of a lawyer and a couple of cohorts, a Wellington lawyer who's been specializing in local government law. And his idea was that a quasi bank be created, which will be called the Local Government Funding Agency. It would have the power to, because it's not a public organization, it's not a government organization, it's a private organization. So it has the power to source money from anywhere in the world that it likes. Okay? So it can go offshore and borrow Swiss francs or Dutch guilders or pounds or euros or American or dollars,
rupees,
whatever, rupees, yeah, anything at all, yeah, rubles, and it can do that using all these swaps and credit arrangements, etc. So it can build up a pool of capital, and the plan is that local government will stop borrowing from banks and other such institutions, because the banks will be giving the money to the local government funding agency by way of loans, and local government will borrow its money that it needs for infrastructure building or any other purpose, holidays for the mayor or whatever. It will borrow this money from the local government funding agency. And why will it do that? Because it will be able to borrow that money from the local government funding agency for a couple of percentage points less in interest rate than it would be able to borrow the money directly from an institution like the BNZ or the ANZ. And why is that? Because the local government funding agency will have as its constituent members the local government organisations throughout the country. And each of those, in order to become a member, signs a deed that says that it, that local government entity, will make good on any loss that is sustained by any other local government entity. And it will rate its population to contribute whatever its share is to make up any loss that is incurred by that agency.
So it's forced corporate fascist socialism.
Oh, absolutely. It's the total, it's the absolute quintessential example of privatization of benefit and socialization of risk. And the let me just paint a small picture of what could happen here. We know, but look at the numbers, they are public numbers, what's happening to the indebtedness of Auckland. It's going into debt at a completely, utterly unsustainable rate. There is not the slightest possibility in hell of the Auckland population being able to generate enough wealth to pay the Auckland Council debt. Now, the Auckland Council, therefore, at some stage, will default.
Well, the lenders don't want the money back. They want real assets, because they can just make money up. That's fine. But they want real assets to trade for them. And as far as I know, Auckland still has approximately $40 billion worth of publicly held assets that haven't been stolen yet.
Well, that's right. But you see, that's what I meant. When I say that Auckland will default, it will have exhausted all those things by the time that comes, because that's what's happening in Kuiper now. These government commissioners are going around selling all of the community-owned assets that they can lay their hands on that aren't specifically sequestered by legislative protection.
And they can sell them off in secret too, can't they?
They sell them off in secret. There's no public consultation. They sell them in secret. Interestingly, the current instance of this in Kuiper, just to digress for a moment, is they decided to sell a block of – council commissioners decided to sell a block of land. It's a block of land that has been lying fallow for years. It's right next to residential sites. It's a wetland. It has geckos, frogs, skinks, all sorts of birds, eels, and all sorts of other wildlife in it some of it may even be unique now because of the pressure on all the surrounding wetland. But this wetland, so they've decided to sell it off. So they gave it to Barfoot and Thompson to sell. And they didn't consult the public at all. In fact, John Robertson, the chair of commissioners, says, oh, the people of Mangawai didn't have any interest in any land except that was on the coast. That's because they were never asked to give an opinion about any of the land other than the land on the coast. So he said, we haven't got any impediment to selling it. So they said to Barfoot and Thompson, sell this land. So Barfoot and Thompson said, okay, we'll sell it by tender. Now,
unfortunately, we're coming to break. Barfoot and Thompson are going to sell that land by tender. We're coming to break, and we'll come straight back to this. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on American Freedom Radio. This is listener-supported, so please donate today by either to myself or American Freedom Radio or both. We'll be right back.
Welcome to the world's meeting place. American.
Practically narcotic.
Freedom.
Oh, yes. I like very much.
Radio.
You're an American institution.
American Freedom Radio.
Did you know there are 3 million edible food plants on Earth, and none have the nutritional value of the hemp plant? HempUSA.org offers you hemp protein powder. It does not contain chemicals or THC, is non-GMO, and is 100% gluten-free. Hemp protein powder burns fat, builds muscle, contains 53% protein, and feeds the body the nutrients it needs. Call 888-910-4367 and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org. HempUSA.org introduces 3 brand new detox formulations of micro plant powder. Brain Fuel for depression, bipolar disorders, and stress. Total Care, anti-cancer agent that cleans the liver and organs and increases memory. Rejuvenate, invigorates and heals the body, mind, and spirit. These products are your alternative to pharmaceuticals. Call 888-910-4367 and like us on Facebook. We ship worldwide. Only at HempUSA.org.
I don't like words that hide the truth. I don't like words that conceal reality. I don't like euphemisms. And American English is loaded with euphemisms because Americans have a lot of trouble dealing with reality. Americans have trouble facing the truth. So they invent a kind of a soft language to protect themselves from it. I'll give you an example of that. When I was a little kid, if I got sick, they wanted me to go to the hospital and see the doctor. Now they want me to go to a health maintenance organization. Smug, greedy, well-fed white people have invented a language to conceal their sins. It's as simple as that. The CIA doesn't kill anybody anymore. They neutralize people. The government doesn't lie. It engages in disinformation. Israeli murderers are called commandos. Arab commandos are called terrorists. Contra killers are called freedom fighters. Well, if crime fighters fight crime and firefighters fight fire, what do freedom fighters fight? They never mention that part of it to us, do they? Never mention that part of it.
Wadia will remain a dictatorship. Or be quiet. Why are you guys so anti-dictators? Imagine if America was a dictatorship. You could let 1% of the people have all the nation's wealth. You could help your rich friends get richer by cutting their taxes and bailing them out when they gamble and lose. You could ignore the needs of the poor for healthcare and education. Your media would appear free but would secretly be controlled by one person and his family. You could wiretap phones. You could torture foreign prisoners. You could have rigged elections. You could lie about why you go to war. You could fill your prisons with one particular racial group, and no one would complain. You could use the media to scare the people into supporting policies that are against their interests.
You're listening to AmericanFreedomRadio.com, the network who perseveres in delivering intelligent debate, constructive dialogue with true independence. The freedom to broadcast the truth is not free at all. So what is American Freedom Radio worth to you? The empowering information with fun, honest and pure integrity behind it provides an example to follow. Friendships to flourish with the moral altruism that pulls no punches. The hosts sacrifice and show remarkable discipline in their duty to deliver quality radio in service to the community with strength, wisdom and loyalty. The founders of AFR wish to thank you personally for sharing your views and insights to make the best radio and alternative media. Now it's time for you to give something back and play a vital role in the future of America. Be as generous with us as we've been with you. Click on the donate banner at AmericanFreedomRadio.com or volunteer by emailing AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Vaccines, psychotropic drugs, and artillery batteries not included.
No rules, no rules, no taboo topics, no taboo topics, no fear of doom, no fear of doom. We are American Freedom Radio, American Freedom Radio.
pendejo. For some reason, you stumbled across the second hour of the Vinny Eastwood show. I hope you don't take it too seriously, man. Vinny certainly doesn't. So sit back, enjoy the complimentary GMO marijuana and fluoridated cerveza, and embrace the probability of your imminent death. Now here's your host, the Chicano from the North Island, Vinny Eastwood.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinny Eastwood Show. Do you know, I've been on air for 5 years with my own show. This is the longest time I have ever remained employed anywhere, right? And I think the reason is because I'm a lot smarter than some people, I get really bored really quickly. This is the only job I have ever had where I can speak to people who are smarter than me, who are so interesting that they can hold my attention for hours, and I frickin' love it. Anybody else, you got a job out there? Doesn't stimulate you as much as this job? Mate, find alternative employment. Trust me, it'll do wonders for your soul. My very special guest, speaking of good souls and people who are pretty frickin' bright, and if I may say so, laying down the facts and the information and things of that sequentially with the amount of detail that you do, I haven't actually been as inspired by any New Zealand activist as much as you inspire me, Bruce, since I met Penny Bright, you know? And that's pretty much the highest praise I can give an activist.
Well, that's that is high praise, and I don't know that I deserve that at all, Vinny. I know that Penny Bright terrifies some people, but her perseverance and her willingness to dig into things and uncover facts is truly astonishing. She's the kind of person who should be getting knighthoods in New Zealand. Not these slime bags who get gongs for stealing money.
Well, she did get a good citizenship award, and then the council tried to take her house off her for unpaid rates, which she's disputing to pay, because the council doesn't disclose where any of the money is going. All right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
If anybody else out there has anything, you know, that they've got to say bad about Penny, first of all, you're going to make an enemy of me very quickly. I don't tolerate people giving Penny shit, because there's nothing to give her shit about. And secondly, if you think you can do better, put your freehold home on the line for your community to make sure that corrupt people aren't running it into the ground. Okay, are you willing to lose your home in order to get that accomplished, not knowing if you're going to be victorious? That is Penny Bright in a nutshell.
It is Penny Bright, and it is also a small group of stalwart people here in Kaipara. I just got the rates demand from Kaipara District Council for the current instalment. They now say that I owe them $31,000. There was a finding in the district court in Whangarei in a hearing in front of one K. Derrida, judge of the district court, in which he found for the KDC on every point that the KDC brought to the court where they were suing me and my wife for non-payment of rates. He has awarded, He has found in favour of the KDC so they can collect those rates and all the penalties, and he has imposed costs of $28,000 as well.
They're calling them rates demands. I mean, what is this now, a hostage negotiation?
Meet our demands.
Yeah, basically. The next move by them, if we either refuse to pay or can't pay, will be proceedings to sell up our house. Our house is not encumbered by a mortgage, so it's a freehold asset worth a great deal more than the amount the council are demanding. But of course, we would lose where we live if our house got sold out from under us.
And that kind of stress that they put on people, it's like I see comments online and things like, oh, these bums should just pay their rates and stuff like that. It's like, you don't understand, bro, the stress that it puts on you to take a stand against scum, okay? You don't understand the pressure that people are under. You don't understand the morality and the conscience that it takes to make a decision like that.
Well, I'd just like to just draw a contrast between Penny and ourselves. What I've just painted will probably have some people pretty aghast that a council could behave that way. But we have actually, because I've been the chair of this Ratepayers Association, we have had a tremendous amount of moral and financial support in defending all these actions and bringing these actions to court. Penny has done all of this entirely on her own. And the amount of courage and fortitude and energy that it takes to take on a scumbag operation like Auckland Council on your own, it's beyond my comprehension how she could have done it, actually.
With type 2 diabetes on $140 a week that she's getting in rent from her one flatmate, right?
Yeah.
Nobody but Penny could do that. Now, we're getting off topic here because we were talking about wetlands, Barfoot selling the wetlands via tender. I don't know what tender means. For me, it's a kind of meat preparation technique.
Yeah, well, that's a very good question, and it was exactly the point that I was going to go on to. In selling property by tender means that you basically put your offer in an envelope, and all the envelopes are then opened on a given day, and the best tender that is found in those envelopes is the one that is taken up. Now, in order to find out what the terms of this tender were, because whenever a property is put up for tender, a set of documents is created by the tendering agency so that if you want to be a tenderer, you fill in the tender documents according to the rules laid down by the tenderer. And that's how you submit your tender. Sometimes there are no tender documents. You just put in your tender. You just write a letter saying, I tender $1 million for this block of land and I will settle within 90 days or whatever. That would be your tender. But in this case, it's a tender by council, so there need to be tender documents. I know of two people who've gone to Barfoot's and asked for the tender documents so that they could prepare their own tender to buy this land. And Barfoot's have said, oh, no, the tender documents aren't available. So this looks like a tender in which the decision as to who's going to get the land has been made before the tender was even opened. So it looks to me like there's been some sweethearting deal set up between either the commissioners or the commissioners working with Barfoot to sell the land to some pre-agreed buyer. This is not at all uncommon in the Kaipara. When the land required to get rid of the effluent from the sewage scheme was being sought, a farm was identified that could be bought, that could be used to distribute this effluent, this treated water. And the farm mysteriously passed through several hands before it ended up in the council's hands. And the Auditor General refused to look into it other than to say that the budget for this arrangement was $300,000 and the final cost was $11.3 million. So this farm started off as a farm at a QV valuation, we understand, of $6.8 million, and it ended up in the council's hands as a non-working farm with a QV valuation of $1.5 million. But the council paid something like $6.8 million for it. And we have grounds for believing that some elected councillors were owners of that farm during one of the transactions while it moved from being the original owners in the original owner's hands through to being in the council's hands. Well, like so this council's not at all – sorry?
Covert embezzlement kind of thing.
Yeah, covert embezzlement. And the way the land transfer system works in New Zealand, it's extremely difficult to find out who the proxy owners were or the intermediate owners were. And in fact, the price of the transaction, I don't think that's even recorded in the files. So this is par for the course. This is business as usual for the Kaipa District Council, and it looks as though the commissioners are just simply taking over where the previous elected councillors left off. I can't prove that there's any skullduggery going on, but we by being healthily sceptical, you have to ask the question, why are they doing it this way? So that's the current little saga that's going on in Kaipara, and that's sort of par for the course now. No,
I was thinking that we should make a short television commercial, Bruce, advertising corrupt investment opportunities and things like that, advertising money laundering and New Zealand as the destination for your criminal enterprises. You know, come to New Zealand. We've got an Auditor General that hasn't done their job in 20 years. Come to New Zealand. We've got X amounts of checks and balances that nobody else has, so we can make sure that nobody ever finds out that you've even committed your crimes. Come to New Zealand, where the judges are so corrupt, where even if you commit the crimes, if you just give them a cut of the proceeds, they'll let you off scot-free. You know?
I don't know whether the advertising is necessary, Vinny, because I think all the people who are interested in this already know it, and they're here. The Chinese Chinese gangsters are here.
Huh? I know. However, the goal is to actually make it look like an official advertisement, Bruce, as if the government made it, you know, like 100% right. Pure corruption.
Yes, this has been authorised by your minister for business innovation and whatever it is, yes. There's an interesting development going on up in the Karikari Peninsula. It's called, I've forgotten, but it's a Chinese investment. They've bought a very large amount of land up there, beautiful land with beautiful beaches, and they are setting up a huge, very high value tourist operation up there. You know, helicoptering in the wealthy Chinese. Now, the kind of people that go to these things want to be entertained. They want access to drugs. They want access to women. They want access to boys. They want access to little girls. They want access to pornography. And they want access to all the other things that the rich and famous believe it is their normal right to have. Now, I find it very, very interesting that after he left Parliament, Mike Sabin was appointed to be CEO of this Chinese venture on the Karikari Peninsula.
Ho, ho, ho. Whoa.
Let's move on. What else can we talk about, Vinny?
Quite frankly, it just fucks me off. Every time you investigate it into almost anything that happens in this country. You barely even need to scratch the surface before you see the rot underneath, and you see these same white-collar criminal scumbags. Their names turn up everywhere. It's like they're a viral plague of scumbaggery that's just infesting the country, right? Like some kind of parasite that lays its eggs inside a host so that its young can eat it from the inside out in order to perpetuate its terrible purpose.
Yes, unfortunately, it's not a New Zealand phenomenon. It's rampant throughout Australia. The difference between New Zealand and Australia is that even the police in Australia acknowledge that they're corrupt. You know, they say we are rotten to the core, actually we're not going to do anything about it. You know, but that's at least slightly more honest than the way we go on here, which is that we're as pure as the driven snow, and anybody who says otherwise should be smashed to pieces like Nikki Hager. So
the thing is, I get tired of people saying, oh, you shouldn't get angry, you know, nothing can ever achieve by anger. Like, what can those people describe to me what an appropriate response level of fuckery is?
Well, I think the people who say don't get angry have got a message, have got a point. Because I've always been inclined to get into a towering rage when I see injustice. And as soon as I get into a towering rage, I stop thinking and I stop being rational and I achieve absolutely nothing. But I have learned a little bit over the last year, and it's almost too late for me to learn now, but I have learned a little bit over the years of this litigation that we've been trying to fight, and that is that losing your rag gets you nowhere. What you've got to do is, I can't remember who said it, don't get angry, get even. And that's what we've got to learn to do. When we get shafted by the courts, we've got to come back and analyse what they've done and show them the error of their ways using their rules, using their protocols. And only when we have completely exhausted, with a smile on our face, with a forelock tugging humility, only when we have exhausted all of the possibilities through the legitimate channels, only then do we turn the tap on and expose the level of corruption in the system. But until you've actually proven that the system is corrupt, it doesn't do you any good to make allegations of corruption. You can say, I really can't understand why this happened, other than if something corrupt has been going on. But you actually owe it to yourself and to your supporters to prove that the explanation is corruption and not some other cause. We are just soldiering on, exhausting all the avenues that we have available to us through the Court of Appeal, the High Court, the Court of Appeal, and if we can, the Supreme Court, to settle once and for all whether the rule of law still applies in New Zealand. I'm sorry.
Sorry, no, you continue. It's my show.
The rule of law, it's an interesting term. Most politicians haven't got the faintest idea what the rule of law means. Most of the arrogant, useless swines in Parliament, and unfortunately they're more numerous than we would like, think the rule of law is the power of Parliament to lord it over the population. However, the rule of law is a very specific thing, and it's a concept that developed in ancient Rome. And the idea is, in fact, I think it probably came out of Greece originally, but it was certainly enshrined by the Romans. And the idea is that the whole of society is subject to law, and that everybody in society is subordinate to the law that is established by society. Now, the rule of law starts to break down when, for example, a council that is subject to its laws ignores them, and then, having ignored them and seen that there will be some very adverse consequences for their little game, if they, now that they have been caught, or more particularly, if they are caught, they then go to Parliament and put up a bill to change the law historically, retrospectively, so that they didn't commit the breach of the law that they did commit. That is a classic example of the breakdown of the rule of law. Because what it does is it says, you're subject to the law, but if you breach the law and your name is John Robertson or Bruce Rogan, then you can go to Parliament and have the law set aside in your case. And the classic examples are these retrospective validation acts that have been passed by Parliament to remove illegality by councils. The most recent example was the Canterbury District Council, or it might have been Christchurch City Council. I think it might have been Christchurch City Council, didn't set dates for the payments of their rates. They are required to do so by law. Somebody found out, before anybody challenged them, somebody found out that they hadn't done this. So they hastily drew up a bill, took it to Parliament and said, could you fix this for us, please? And Parliament said, yep, three bags full, no problem. And they passed the law, which meant that the illegality that the council had committed was removed from the law books. So the courts, if I brought a case against the council for failing to set its dates, the courts would say, no, the council did set its dates because the laws were changed to say that they were set, even though they weren't.
The safest employment for a career criminal appears to be the legislature.
Yes. And in fact, beautiful example of John Key getting involved in selling our law was the legislation he put in place to guarantee the regime for hiring for the Warner Brothers organisation.
And one of my brothers is working on what are those guys who go up and they find, you know, places, location scouts, that's it. And I didn't understand exactly what, you know, laws are changing and everything. And he said, well, basically it works like this. You know how when you're an employee, you get holiday pay, you get KiwiSaver, you get umpteen protections for your workers' rights and things like that. And they pay your taxes for you and that kind of thing. They just take it out of your paycheck. So it's actually really cheap, really easy. All you have to do is just turn up to work and then take your money home at the end of the day. Well, now you're a private contractor. You have to do your own taxes. You have no KiwiSaver, no extra goodies or benefits of any kind. And essentially, if you don't like it, we can just fire you and get another person, and there ain't squat you can do in the legal system to change that fact. But I'll also add another example, which is, I think, even better example, and maybe even perhaps more poignant, is the Government Communications and Security Bureau, the GCSB, which has a office of the National Security Agency in its building in Wellington. Are you listening, Americans? They illegally surveilled, on record, 80 top New Zealand activists, right? Illegally. And then John Key passed a law retroactively to make breaking that law legal, and now and continues to spy on them to this day, probably.
Yep. That's when the rule of, that is what is meant by the jurists who understand it as the breakdown of the rule of law. When the law is set aside for expediency reasons. If John Key was driving his car along the road today in New Zealand, and he was driving in a 100K zone, and he was doing 180Ks, and he was apprehended by the police. And setting aside the very strong likelihood that the ticket would be torn up before it was written. But if he was then taken to court for exceeding the 100K limit by 80Ks, what you would find in New Zealand today, in my view, is that by the time it got to court, there would be a speed limit, retrospective speed limit, the John Key retrospective speed limit validation bill would have been processed by the House under urgency. And it would turn out that the speed limit for John Key at that time and at that place was actually 1,000 kilometres per hour, not 100. And so he was travelling well within the speed limit, case dismissed. That's the sort of thing that's happening in New Zealand on a regular basis now.
Don't worry, ladies and gentlemen, your politicians are acting well within the made-up laws.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And if we let this go on, I mean, the people of Kaipara had identified a very large number of irregularities in the way the rates were set and assessed. And the step that's supposed to come before that, where the community is consulted about the proposed expenditure, those steps had not even been done at all. And they are a lawful prerequisite to setting and assessing the rates. We put a file together of all of the transgressions that the council had made, and we gave it to the council, and that was given to a lawyer by the name of Jonathan Salter of Simpson Grierson, who took it under the guise of a first principles review of all the rating decisions of the council and came back to the council and said, well, these people are actually right. All of these rates decisions are invalid, and if a court looked at them, it would set them aside. We then said to the council, well, okay, you've admitted that now, so that's good. And the mayor at the time apologised to the community for all the cock-ups. And we said, well, that's very good. That's nice of you to apologise. Now let's sit down and work out how we're going to deal with all the consequences of all these errors. They turned around immediately and said, oh, no. The apology is all you're going to get. We're not going to do anything about these things because our view, our advice from the lawyer, one Jonathan Salter, is that everything that the council does is lawful until a court says otherwise. So we said, well, are you seriously taking that view that you, even though you've admitted that these things were unlawful and improper and incorrect and inappropriate, that you're going to now pretend that they weren't any of those things and that you're just going to sail on? They said, yep, that's how we're going to do it. Because the council had actually apologised, it looked as though they were actually coming onto our side. And in fact, the CEO at the time had agreed with me that they would put in a community-funded auditor to go through the books and identify all the irregularities, which we thought was a great step forward. Suddenly, the elected council resigns and asks the minister to replace them with government-appointed commissioners. The government-appointed commissioners came in, and the first thing they did was they said, you no longer talk to the CEO, that he is not accessible to you, absolutely no further. That proposal to put in an auditor has been squashed, and we are going to raise a local bill to fix all these errors in the rates. Well, we said, well, if that's your position, we're going to take all these things to the High Court and get the High Court to judicially review them. We did that. We had an application into the court long before the government ever saw the local bill that Mike Sabin sponsored into the House. Remember that name. And when it got into the House, the government realized that the High Court was likely to sit and hear these matters before the bill was passed, so it expedited the bill. Other similar bills that had been languishing in the House for 5 years, our bill caught and passed them like a Ferrari at Le Mans, and was passed in December 2014, 2 months before our case was heard by the High Court. So when it got to the High Court, the High Court said, well, there's no case to hear now because the government's removed your case. And we said, well, you know, isn't that a violation of our rights under the Bill of Rights? Oh, yes, it is, but it doesn't matter. We don't care because Parliament has the right to ignore the Bill of Rights. Well, we said, yes, perhaps it does, and we accept that it does, however outrageous that might be constitutionally. But what about the council? It advanced the bill. It has no right to violate the Bill of Rights. I said, oh, well, we're not even going to think about that. So that ended up being the situation. We got thrown out. The case was found entirely in the council's favour based on this validation bill, that is absolutely vile validation bill that had been put in place. And so we appealed that decision of the High Court to the Court of Appeal, and the Court of Appeal cemented the High Court decisions in place using fast-setting cement. So, and not only that, but it awarded costs against us for having the cheek to come near the Court of Appeal when a decision had already been entered against us in the High Court. Not only that, he said, but one of the judges in the Court of Appeal said, you people shouldn't have come here asking for judgments against the council. You should have sued the Auditor General and all the other crooks who stole money. And that was when our jaw dropped to the floor and we said, well, you know, what on earth, where have we reached in New Zealand? What is the purpose of the judiciary? And we still are completely aghast at the outcome.
However, again, I would advise the jaded cynicism. It alleviates a lot of the disappointment. Like, if you look at the court system in fact, let me just back up a second. When people see crime, criminality, things that they don't understand, right, it's usually because there's some kind of bad thing that you're not supposed to understand that is going on. And you not knowing what the hell is going on is precisely the point, because only with the public kept in the dark can the criminality continue unabated.
Yeah.
And people go, oh, well, I just don't understand. Why would they do that? Well, it's because they're psychopathic criminals, okay? I'm sorry, yeah. But that's right. Unfortunately the case, okay? Psychopathic criminals, if they crave only two things, it is power and control, not accountable power, not beneficent control, malignant.
Yeah. Yep. The real risk, there is a real risk in New Zealand that we won't have another general election, in my opinion.
Well,
that might sound a little bit extreme.
I think it does sound a little bit extreme because the sorry, actually, finish your point, and then I'll rebut it in a second. But you know how I like to rebut things. I rebut in a way. Actually, I agree with you.
Well, if there was a significant deterioration in the level of support for Key and National over the course of the next 6 to 9 months, my view is that the Americans would tell Key that it's too risky to let democracy continue to run unchecked in New Zealand, and there would need to be some action by the government to prevent a democratic election taking place. Now, when you say, when you're about to rebut me here, that is exactly what the Americans did in many South American countries. When the people either looked as though they were going to elect a popular government, or actually did elect a popular government, the American military-industrial complex stepped in and fixed it. They slaughtered Allende. They bombed Grenada with a population of about 150 people. They interfered in Uruguay. They have totally stuffed Mexico as a country. And God knows what else they're involved in South America. And they have interfered in the outcomes in the Middle East in the most shameless way. For example, you know, Hezbollah was elected to office in the Palestinian state. And the Americans said, oh, well, the people have just got that wrong. They shouldn't have done that. So that government can't be recognized. And the Americans and other states do it all the time. If they don't get the result they want, they change it. And we're ripe for it happening here.
Well, a couple of things to support your case. Operation Catapo, running in New Zealand, I think it was 2013, largest movement of foreign troops on New Zealand soil since World War II, with the premise of the war game being that the US troops have to land on beaches that are full of anti-US protesters and they have to somehow come in and take out a democratically elected leader who is anti-US, right? So that's one. So they're already planning to do exactly what you're saying. Number two, I completely agree with the historical context of this. However, the influencing factors, people have said to me, oh, Vinny, look at the polls. You know, I can't believe John Key's going to win again. You know, he's not, he can't win. You know, we're too successful at undermining him. And I go, no. Okay. No. Let me explain something to you. You know, somebody said this to me in 2012 when John Key was running for his first re-election. Somebody says this to me and I go, look, let me explain something to you. John Key was sent here to destroy this country. Is it destroyed yet? No, he's going to get re-elected then. And then in 2014, somebody comes to me and they go, oh, John Key's so unpopular. There's all this stuff that Kim.com's bringing out and Nikki Hager and everything. And I said, look, John Key was sent here to destroy this country. Is it destroyed yet? No, he's going to be re-elected. Then it emerges that our voting system is very, very easy to compromise. We got sent voting cards. Now, a good portion of the population don't actually vote. And what I find very interesting about this is that all of them, if they're on the electoral roll, and the majority of people are, they will all be sent their voting card with all of their details. You can go into any voting booth, say that you're somebody else with their voting card that you stole out of their letterbox, and you can go vote for them, right? Easy as that. No IDs, no nothing. We've probably got one of a very, very easily rigged system here. And the problem is compounded by the fact that we have a completely compliant media. However, the media is not voluntarily compliant. They have been forced to be compliant with the national government. There have been, I think, close to 10 top New Zealand journalists in talk radio, the news, Māori television, you name it, that have lost their jobs since John Key got elected, only to be replaced by talking heads that are puppets for the current national government, people like Mr. Mike Hosking, especially. You know, they just absorb the audience.
Well, I don't example think of the
I don't think they need to suspend democracy here. I think they've already had it rigged for quite some time.
I agree. The evidence is that there is no democracy in New Zealand anymore. And our encounters with the court system suggest that it too has been nobbled. I'm still hoping that's not the case, but it looks very bad from where I am. The It is well within the realms of possibility, the way everything has been monetized, that you recall that people have been duped into believing that it's okay to be able to sell your holidays. You know, you have a right to a certain amount of paid leave, and you can trade your paid leave in for money.
To pay bills that you can't pay because you're not getting paid enough.
Yeah, that's right. So you can end up being a 365 days a year slave to your employer. That's coming. It's only a very short step away from a right to sell your vote. So you get your voting papers in the post, and then a few days later you get a letter from someone that says, look, you've got a vote available. Would you like a few dollars for that vote? And if you're on the bones of your ass, why wouldn't, if you weren't going to vote anyway, and you're on the bones of your ass, why wouldn't you take $100 for your vote?
Bruce, in the United States, they asked a classroom of students in a university, if I gave you the new iPhone, would you give up your right to vote? And like 89% of the class or something said, yep.
Yeah, that is exactly right. And that's the kind of result you get when you've created a hand-to-mouth society, when you've polarized the wealth so much that everybody's on the bones of his ass, so they can't have any principles anymore. Principles are a luxury that an affluent society has. And that's all been traded away. It's a bit depressing, but the thing is that you have to be prepared to acknowledge these possibilities. You see, you walk up to the average man in the street and you say, 6 months' time you'll be allowed to sell your vote. And he says, oh, don't be so bloody ridiculous, Bruce. God, you're a conspiracy theorist. That could never happen. And if you said to him 6 months before the Warner Brothers legislation, do you know that the New Zealand Parliament's going to legislate a special labour environment for a foreign filmmaker who's coming into the country? It's, oh, don't say ridiculous. We all have to live under the same laws. And then when it happens, they say, oh, dear, well, that happened. Goodness me. But, you know, they still deny that the next thing will happen and the next thing. But the psychopathic politicians know that there is basically, well, Samuel Beckett said it best, there is actually no level of degradation to which the human race will not stoop.
I believe I saw a quote. I'm not sure if it was actually a quote from John Key, but it is a picture of him with a – it says, if I told people that I was born in a log cabin that I helped my father build, most of my supporters would believe it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now, what Nikki Haga's dirty politics, I think, really exposed is just the point of fact that these people have absolutely no respect for voters or anybody for that matter, no respect for anybody. And that is who people are electing to rule over them. Vote for me, everybody. I don't give a fuck about you. Oh, right. Well, he doesn't give a fuck. That's great. Fantastic. You know, I mean, we wouldn't want change or anything.
No, well, of course, they don't say what you just said. They say, vote for me, people, because I'll leave you alone and I'll give you a tax break. I'll give you a tax cut.
And then I'll raise the taxes in like seven different ways, except the main income tax, which I promise not to.
Yes, I'll raise taxes on all the things that you can't avoid paying tax on, and I'll leave the taxes low for those people who can avoid paying tax, and that's exactly what's happened. I mean, I go down to Auckland from time to time, what I used to do was drive down that motorway. That motorway is just a tax. It's $2.30 tax to straight to John Key for driving on that short bit of motorway. So I always go the other way now. And it turns out that there's so little traffic on the other way now, it doesn't take any more time and it's a much more pleasant drive. So, you know, there are all sorts of ways in which this government, since it came to power, has increased the tax burden on ordinary people, while persuading them that they've lessened the tax burden. It's just, they're just lying through their teeth.
It makes me want to stab myself in the eye socket whenever I hear these people. Oh, I just go, John Key's the best prime minister we've ever had. The economy's on the right track. Really? The best prime minister we've ever had. The economy's on the right track. Did you forget
about the $100 billion in debt he got us in?
Well, $100 billion in debt he got us in? Well, what did the last government get us in? Well, all previous governments throughout the entirety of history of New Zealand managed to rack up collectively $8 billion in debt. John Key, in less than two terms, $100 billion, not including the $100-plus billion since 2011 of off-the-books derivatives debts, which aren't counted on the national debt clock. Now, considering that was on the last time it was reported on was 2011, I'd say we're probably, you know, I'm just going to take a stab in the dark here, $500 billion in debt? Something like that? You know, that sounds perfectly reasonable to me. However, the thing is people don't understand. They can't quantify that numbers that big. Okay?
They have no comprehension of numbers that big. There's a very interesting statement. I think it was made by John Kenneth Galbraith, who's a famous American economist, and he did some surveying around the world of what numbers meant to people, and he cited an Aboriginal language from somewhere in Northern Australia, in which numbers went, the system of counting went one, two, three, many. And that was it, because there was no need in their society for a number bigger than three. Then nobody ever had any more than three children, because if they did, they died off until you were back down to three or less. And you didn't ever go and catch more than two kangaroos. So there was no need for a number bigger than three. So they had that concept, which people say, well, you know, they're a primitive people. It's not because they're a primitive people. It's because their number system served their purposes. For ordinary people in New Zealand, probably the largest number they deal with is 100 or something like that. So when you talk about a billion, you could be talking about green cheese or Martians or anything else. It makes no impression on them whatsoever. And they simply say, oh, well, it must be a large number of something other than the dollars that I get, something else. And of course, they know they can do nothing about it anyway, so they don't trouble themselves. They just simply say, well, that's how it is.
And the longer we sit here and do nothing, the worse the problem is going to get. What's problematic about that dynamic, though, is that the worse things get, the less time people have, because they have to work even harder just to live.
Well, yes, the world order has got to be changed. I mean, a lot of people, like Thomas Piketty and others, have been saying this for a long time, that the world order has got to be changed. Like, you can't fix the Greece problem by simply lending them enough money to make it look as though their books are balanced, because there isn't enough wealth being generated in the Greek community to service the debt that creates. So it's a complete illusion to think that you can just that bunches of criminals like the World Bank and the IMF can simply paper over the cracks and keep the whole charade going by creating new debt. The debt's actually got to be scrubbed, and the people who own the debt have actually got to take a haircut. And it's got to happen. It's got to happen everywhere in the world, or the result, the outcome will be that extremist Islamism will take over, because that bankrupt philosophy actually offers more hope to destitute people than the system that the poor bloody destitute people are living in.
And ironically, it's outlawed usury.
Yes, it's amazing, isn't it, that they did. And yes, you're not allowed to charge interest on your money and things like that. Now, when back in the 50s, America decided that it was going to colonize the world by both military and non-military strategies. And one of its non-military strategies was evangelism. And you may recall, or you might not be old enough, but I recall, this country was absolutely riddled with pairs of gawkish bloody twerps from Utah riding around on bikes, dressed in suits and bicycle clips, carrying a Bible, proselytizing the Mormon church throughout New Zealand. And they would knock on your door and come in and tell you what a wonderful thing the Mormon church was and how, you know, this was the Latter-day Saints were going to come and save the world. Now, there were a lot of very vulnerable people, most of them Maori people, who swallowed this line of crap and joined up. And a lot of them are still there today. And you can propagandize people in this way. All you have to do is have enough money to have an army to go out there and do it. And people have been propagandized again by this debt thing. In New Zealand, if you watch television in New Zealand, you see maybe 100 or 150 times a night an offer that enables you to go and get some goods that you almost certainly can't afford, and you don't have to pay for it until 2018 or 2017. No interest charges and no payments until 2017. You can carpet your house for nothing. You can buy a car for nothing. You can do all these things for nothing, except, of course, that your soul is sold to the devil for doing it. You're locked in a debt trap that you will never get out of. And thousands and thousands of gullible, perfectly decent, but gullible, honest people are caught up in this cycle. And they will never get out of it. Because they will, unlike me, who lived at a time when you could actually earn enough money to keep your head above water, most of the people in New Zealand cannot and never will be able to earn enough money to keep themselves above water. They will simply live in a cycle of debt and dependency that will get worse and worse and worse.
They will be slaves, debt slaves.
Yeah, they'll be slaves, yeah.
We already are to a large degree, Bruce.
Yeah.
You know, slavery is when you take 100% of somebody's income off them and you keep it for yourself. Now, at what percentage does having your income taken off you and given to somebody else without you having a choice in the matter, at what percentage does it suddenly magically become not slavery? You know, is it 30% of your income without a choice? Is it 10%? You know, I don't know, but I think that the modern servitude and slavery is probably, it's one of the linchpins of the operation of all society, because everything's run on debt. You know, people think the economy runs on oil. No, it doesn't. It runs on debt. Okay. The oil's just something to grease the wheels. You know, because oil's actually real. Money can be made out of nothing, and debt can be accumulated without limits. Okay.
Yeah, and is being, yeah.
And there's no protection for somebody who's already in that, because it's mathematically impossible to pay off all the debt, because when they create that debt out of thin air, and this has been on mainstream media, ladies and gentlemen, even Google New Zealand mainstream media money out of thin air, all right? And you'll come up with this thing from Seven Sharp where they admit and they show people on network television that all your debts are made up out of nothing, and you pay for the rest of your life for that thing that they can do with a piece of paper and a pen just like that. In fact, it's so much easier, they only need to type a couple of keys now in order to enslave you with debt for life. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest has been Bruce Rogan from the Mungify Residents and Ratepayers Association. Thank you very much, Bruce, for joining me. Now, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to have this service of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, bringing you people like Bruce and people who expose scumbaggery, who are not corporate funded, you need to fund this broadcast. Go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com and sign up for a monthly donation today. Thank you very much. We'll see you again sometime.
News and information you can trust. This is American Freedom Radio. Freedom, freedom, American Freedom Radio. Radio. American Freedom Radio.
Nutritious food is real body armor. It builds muscle, burns fat, improves digestion, and feeds the entire body the nutrients it needs. Did you know the U.S. government banned the hemp plant from growing in the United States and classified it as a Schedule 1 drug to hide it behind the marijuana plant? People have been confused about this plant for over 80 years, and many still don't know what hemp is. So now you know hemp is not marijuana, and marijuana is not hemp. They are different varieties of the same species. HempUSA.org wants the world to know these basic facts and to help people understand that hemp protein powder is the best-kept health secret you need to know about. Remember, hemp protein powder contains 53% protein, is gluten-free, anti-inflammatory, non-GMO, and is loaded with nutrients. Call 888-910-4367, 888-910-4367, and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org.
What kind of person are you? How do you see yourself? Are you the kind of person that lets everyone else do all the work, just hoping that you'll be able to get some of the crumbs that fall from the table? Or are you the kind of person that rolls up their sleeves and does the dirty jobs that no one else wants to do? Are you hoping that all the activists giving their blood, sweat, and tears to serve humanity are going to solve all the world's problems? Or are you just wondering, is there something simple I can do to contribute? Yes. Yes, there is. Help us. Help us do what we do. Partner up with American Freedom Radio today by gifting a regular amount to support the network and your favorite hosts, bringing you less commercials and more information. Go to AmericanFreedomRadio.com and start donating today from between $1 and $100 per month, according to the kind of person you are. Thank you very much for your support.
Everybody talking about gun control. Gotta get rid of the guns. I like guns. You got a gun, you don't have to work out. I ain't working out. I ain't jogging. You don't need no gun control. You know what you need? We need some bullet control. We need to control the bullets. That's right. I think all bullets should cost $5,000. You know why? Because if a bullet costs $5,000, there'll be no more innocent bystanders. Every time somebody gets shot, you'll be like, damn, he must have did something. So they put $50,000 worth of bullets in his hand. And people will think before they kill somebody if a bullet costs $5,000. Man, I would blow your head off if I could afford it. I'm going to get me another job. I'm going to start saving some money. And you a dead man.
You're listening to AmericanFreedomRadio.com, the network who perseveres in delivering intelligent debate, constructive dialogue with true independence. The freedom to broadcast the truth is not free at all. So what is American Freedom Radio worth to you? The empowering information with fun, honest, and pure integrity behind it provides an example to follow. Friendships to flourish with the moral altruism that pulls no punches. The hosts sacrifice and show remarkable discipline in their duty to deliver quality radio in service to the community with strength, wisdom, and loyalty. The founders of AFR wish to thank you personally for sharing your views and insights to make the best radio and alternative media. Now it's time for you to give something back and play a vital role in the future of America. Be as generous with us as we've been with you. Click on the donate banner at AmericanFreedomRadio.com or volunteer by emailing AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Vaccine, psychotropic drugs, and artillery batteries not included.
No rules, no rules, no taboo topics,
no taboo topics,
no fear of doom,
no fear of doom.
We are
American Freedom Radio,
American Freedom Radio.